Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and we have a fun show for you today, an interview, a group interview. So I can tell you right now, I lost control of the reins early. It was out of my hands after that, but we had a fun time. Joining me today are the cast of the indie movie The Morning. And since the interview is chock full of all the information you want, we're just going to jump right on into it. Hi, and welcome back to Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today I'm joined by most of the cast of the movie The Morning. Today we have co-writer and director Mark Klebanoff. We have lead and co-writer Michael Walton. We have one of the female leads, Dominique Swain, and our favorite slice queen, Brooke Lewis, who has organized this, shall we say, Kaffee Klatch.
Yeah.
So yeah. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Now, The Morning is an indie production that has been to several film festivals. It officially opens on March 17th, correct?
That's correct.
Awesome. Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about the film so our listeners know what to expect?
Sure thing. So The Morning is it's kind of a hybrid of a lot of things. It's sci-fi, it's drama, it's supernatural, it's thriller. But basically it revolves around a central character that Michael plays named Aaron. He's a soldier going abroad, going to war during Desert Storm, and he goes MIA. And his friends and family, they mourn him, they move on with their lives. And 20 years later, he comes back to his hometown, kind of under mysterious circumstances. Nobody knows where he's been or what's happened to him. And so a lot of it has to do with how he reassimilates back into these people's lives. But concurrently, there's this big supernatural sci-fi element that kind of hovers around him and progresses the story.
Awesome. Now, where did the idea for the supernatural element come from?
Michael and I talked quite a bit about doing something supernatural. We had actually, several years back, we actually started writing a ghost story that took place in a house. And very coincidentally, a movie called Paranormal Activity came out that was strikingly similar to what we were doing. Not to say that we had any influence on that. It was just total coincidence. But at that point in time, we kind of abandoned what we were doing. But we had already kind of toyed around with that. We love watching stuff like Ghost Hunters and things like that. So, I don't know. It seemed like a natural thing to work into this story. Okay, not to mention, sci-fi definitely is something that's easier from a distribution standpoint.
Okay. So where did the idea for Michael to be, well, not really a spoiler, but incommunicative for the first half of the movie come from?
Michael, you want to address that? Since you're very seemingly bitter about the fact that you have no dialogue.
Yeah, I think I kind of fought you on that. Like, why do we have to have him be mute? I don't understand. So, really, yeah, I'd like to know your explanation behind that, Mark.
The implication is that he was abducted, that where he's been gone for 20 years, and Dominique will talk a bit about her character in a bit.
Oh my gosh, kind of wreck this for me.
Oh, I'm not going to wreck it, but she'll talk about her character.
Don't spoil the film for our audience.
I definitely won't. But the carrot we dangle is that he may have been abducted, and that's where he's been for 20 years. That's why he hasn't aged in the 20 years he's been gone. And when he comes back, something's not quite right about him. He's not his usual talkative, kind of playful self. He's kind of a different incarnation of his former self. So obviously something traumatic's happened to him. We don't know exactly what for a long time, but his lack of ability to speak the first half of the movie kind of plays into that.
Okay, well, I will say for our audience that making Michael focus more on the emotions that he was going through and not speaking them, that actually made for a very profoundly compelling performance. Literally every time he was on the screen and he wasn't saying anything, I couldn't take my eyes off him. I'm like, wow, this, I mean, he's really emoting. I mean, the only thing I could come close to was how Carl Urban did more emoting with just his chin in Dread than a lot of other people's have done in so many other horror movies I've seen.
Not to mention he's naked for the first 5 minutes, too.
It's like the Little Mermaid.
What's like the Little Mermaid? I'm sorry, what?
He's naked and he doesn't speak.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you so much, Summer, for that. That was very kind of you.
You're welcome.
It made sound design a lot cheaper, too, because we didn't have to edit any dialogue for the first 6 minutes.
Plus, there was nowhere to put a mic anyway, so...
So, just so you know, really, for the audience members, Michael, just to stroke your ego for a second, honestly, when Summer and I were prepping the show and stuff, you know, and we were only allowed to bring four of us on, of the cast members and stuff, she really was like, I have to have Michael there. Like, his performance blew me away. I'm not kidding. So I think it's really important for the audience to know that and to really check out the film, and also to shout out real quickly too to our incredible cast: Louis Mandalore, Sally McDonald, King of Philip, Larry Hankin, Peter Dobson, Bob Filmon, Frank Kruger, Ida Mendel, and the list goes on and on. Just really tremendous actors for an indie film.
Yeah, and the other two, my other two co-hosts who also reviewed the film, were also very, very impressed with that performance, and just seeing everyone react to, hey, we thought this guy was dead. He's back. He's not talking. What's going on?
Well, good. Okay, thank you.
Now, tell us about Dominique's character. Where the idea for her? I'm trying to say this without spoiling it. Her very intense obsession with Aaron came from.
Oh well, I can talk about that.
Okay, cool.
Basically, my character is representative of curiosity, and curiosity in a very detrimental way. Or actually, you know what? Curiosity is always good, but it's in the sense that it doesn't care about the reaction on the subject. So it's exactly like removing half of a monkey's brain just to see what happens. But it's something that I've been really interested in for years, and that I simply want to find out about it. And frankly, if he would have cooperated, then there would have been a lot less conflict in the story. But I was never asking to hurt him in any way. So while I play the villain in this film, I don't think that simply wanting to know is a villainous act. And so I actually completely understood my character because I'm nosy, gossipy. No, just kidding. You know, because I think that that knowledge actually breeds the ability to understand in future situations, and that's how we evolve as a species. So I'm not really a bad guy, in my mind. I'm kind of a good guy, with a very unruly specimen.
And just to give a bit of background on her character, she's painted as the villain, but she's basically presented about midway through the film, which ultimately starts really driving the sci-fi aspect of the plot. And she's kind of this ambiguous Man in Black sort of character.
Mm-hmm.
Who, again, she's hell-bent on proving that he was, in fact, abducted. So she's right in that, you know, she's not really trying to hurt him so much as she is just trying to find out the truth. And interestingly, Michael and I actually wrote the role as a male. And we originally cast it as a male, and it just kind of turned out to be a very happy accident that it ended up being played by a female. And it gave it, like, a really interesting layer as well.
Now, going into a little bit of spoiler territory, is the unseen entity connected to her character at all?
The unseen entity that follows Aaron, I would say, is more connected to Aaron. The entity who we refer to as the Guardian, it's never called the Guardian in the movie, but it's credited as the Guardian, and that's kind of what we referred to it as while we were making the film. The Guardian interacts with pretty much every principal character at some point throughout the film, but ultimately it's connected to Aaron. Now, there's kind of different interpretations as to what the Guardian actually is, but what we were trying to get across is that this supernatural presence is more or less something that protects him and always stays close to him.
Okay, that clears up a few things, because the first two or three times where we saw the scenes from the Guardian's point of view, I thought it was a government agency using night vision scopes spying on this soldier who had come back. That's why I initially thought that they were connected to our suited woman until the little girl, Erin, said, yeah, the Sky People are here watching him. And I'm like, wait, what? What did I miss?
Oh, that's actually an interesting perspective.
I hope that everyone has that interpretation. I actually really like that element of Enigma. Wow, I never thought that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Either. I love that's that.
Good. Yeah, that is exactly what I thought. All right. Everyone listening, spoilers from here on out a little bit. I don't care.
No, I need to watch the movie again with that bent because I'm very curious how that would change the film for me. I feel like it would make it even more poignant.
This is where I'm coming from. I thought the observers were part of her group. They were monitoring Aaron's movements and the people he interacted with so they could gather more information. And I honestly thought that Aaron had come back from the dead. I thought he had died. He was a returned supernatural presence that enough
well,
angst.
Well, definitely open to that interpretation for sure. We were hoping that someone would follow it like that.
I did. Yeah. I did. I did follow it like that because my take was people still had unresolved issues and they couldn't move forward and their unresolved issues were holding Aaron's spirit back from moving on to the next world, the next life. So he had to come back.
You complete everything, everyone has to complete something in their life, and until you can do that, you can't move up to the next rung or circle.
Right, because their grief and their love was still holding his spirit back. He had to come back, let them resolve that so he could move on. That's how I was reading the movie right up until the very end confrontation, at which point I went, okay, I missed something, and I had to watch it again.
Summer, you kind of hit the nail on the head, though. Our goal was to create that create that those opposing dynamics of, like, is he dead and the Guardian is his, you know, an angel watching over him, or was he abducted and this is his alien protector? And I mean, that's the thing. You kind of have to watch the movie and figure it out for yourself by watching the movie. And that's kind of the cool thing about it is, like, yeah, you can give spoilers. At the end of the day, if somebody watches the first 10 minutes of this movie, I dare them to turn it off. And not, like, you watch the first 10 minutes and, like, you have to keep watching to figure out what the heck happened.
Yeah, the mystery of it is actually more, like, as much the supernatural element as the plot and every single thing that happens. It's more about people's interpretation and perception.
And I think the ambiguity was one part. All right, I will tell you, the other two reviewers, after watching the movie, they argued with each other for a couple of hours about this. So I don't
That's
know.
That's the point.
If it's
we did it, guys.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like it could be a good thing or a bad thing, but it intrigued them enough that they kept talking about it. They kept arguing about it. And that was, you know, that was one of the things that I interjected was, well, wait a minute. If this is an angelic experience, the woman who thinks it's alien abductions is completely wrong. Are we going to see her finally realize what's going on, or is she just going to stay in the dark? That makes her quest a little wacky. Like, literally, she's way off the deep end into Looney Tunes land.
It was a real well-known individual from Hollywood. I'm not going to tell you who. But this individual, after watching the movie, spent like an hour and a half at the after party. We were drinking at the Roosevelt Hotel across the street from the theater afterwards, and all night was pestering me about my interpretation of what happened to Michael's character. And I've seen him two or three times since then, and he still brings it up. So, like I said, I dare anyone to watch the first 10 minutes and not see it all the way through. And if you watch almost any of my movies, there is a level of ambiguity to it. I mean, that's kind of the point, is to keep people talking and thinking about it. But I think Michael and I did a good job of kind of wrapping it up with a nice, neat little bow at the end. And, you know, it's not something that's going to frustrate people, you know?
All right. Is there a different cut? Because what I saw, it ended right after Michael opened his eyes again. Is he back or is he gone again? There was no answer for that. So,
Kirby does come full circle, but ultimately, you know, I don't think it's one of those things that's going to leave people wanting. We did wrap it up in a circle, and although we didn't necessarily answer every question, I feel good about how we tied it up and kind of left it in a manner that, yeah, there's things that are open to interpretation, but at the end of the day, we didn't just, like, leave everybody hanging either.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that contributed to that was that the characters are at peace and the audience has a lot to think about, but it's with a very positive bent that they can, imagine that everything that has happened is for the best, even if they don't know exactly what it was. Summer?
Mm-hmm.
So how about you address a little bit, like, talking about Michael and where we shot in his hometown in Holland, Michigan, and give a big shout out to everybody?
Well, first, I have to give props to the production designer and your DP, because some of those shots, especially the outdoor distance shots, were just gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, really...
Well, not to say we didn't have an art department, but I like to say that God lit our set, because, I mean, we shot in Western Michigan in the fall, and, I mean, the colors you see are the colors that were there. So our DP did an amazing job capturing that, shooting that. But ironically, we had intended to shoot a month earlier than when we did. We got pushed because of another film we were making. And very coincidentally, we ended up landing there at the exact moment when the leaves were all changing. And so the changeover, you can call it a metaphor, whatever you want, but that was what we were aiming for, it's so unbelievably beautiful. And the fact that we captured it right at the perfect moment it was meant to be, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, God definitely cooperated, because I've had falls in the Midwest that were, you know, from one day to the next, it would either be really windy or it would rain, and they're gone. Like, they're gone as soon as they turn. And I'm not from the Midwest, so it shocked me. But we had we were able to really make it beautiful. And I think that change was actually, not to be all lyrical about it, but it was absolutely perfect for the film, because it was about the change that was experiencing in people. Anyways, whatever. All right.
Yeah. So what would you recommend to a budding indie filmmaker about scouting small town locations?
Do it. Shooting. I've shot most of my career in LA. This was one of my first. I had shot other places, but this was the first time I actually shot a full feature film in a small town like this, significantly outside of LA. And it was like one of the most pleasant experiences I've ever had shooting. It was just, everybody was so open to us doing, just accommodating to us. I mean, granted, we also had full support of the police force in the town where we were, and that's the thing, is like, money doesn't even come up as part of the discussion when you approach people about shooting.
Wow.
Which, if you're on a low budget, that's pretty incredible.
So did you have to get special clearance?
We would have had to spend three to five times the money had we kept it in L.A.
Wow.
To get what we got in Western Michigan. I mean, not just locations, but resources like police cars and airplanes, mm-hmm. and an ambulance and things that we had at our complete disposal for virtually no money. And it was just a small town that isn't close to Hollywood. It was exciting for them.
Yeah, people who are used to filmmakers ambivalence about trashing everything are kind of looking at it like, how much will you pay me to be quiet for 10 minutes? You know, and this was just the polar opposite. Everyone was so nice, so accommodating, and just really embrace the process.
I was wondering, did you have to have like special permission from the police department? Okay, we're going to have a naked man walking down the street for this 10 minutes. Can you just keep everybody out?
Oh, yeah.
Well, hey, Mark.
We're good.
Yeah, you guys talk about planes, trains, and automobiles and police. That's what I call it, the indie film with planes, trains, automobiles.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, that's all due to our friend Marty. The reason we had access to all of that is...
Our superhero friend.
Yeah, our superhero friend, Marty Mandel, who is high up in the police department in Allegan. and just was able to get all of these things for us. I mean, we had permission from the sheriff, the county sheriff. So it was never a problem. Cops wanted to be in our movie, and we put them in, and some of them were actually pretty good actors.
Nice.
Yeah, so
as far as walking
great,
down
you know?
The street naked, that was the coolest thing in the world. I mean, some of the cops were the same cops that arrested me years earlier, and now they're shutting down the streets to let me walk naked.
When he says it was the coolest thing, he means it was pretty breezy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Michigan in the fall is kind of, temperatures trying to drop at night, don't they?
Yeah, but the rush of it was keeping me warm, trust me.
Keeping them warm and full.
Warm and dry.
Full.
It was great. I mean, we had and we kind of tailored the script to what we knew we'd have access to. So we wrote a scene in a jail cell, knowing that we would have access to the jail cell and the booking station. And they literally moved prisoners out of the cell to a different cell to accommodate us. And when we wanted to walk his bare ass down the street, police cars on either side, they blocked it off for us. And I think when I had him walk naked down Main Street, I don't think they were planning on that, but it was kind of one of those, it was just kind of too late by the time it was happening, so they went with it. But yeah, they were completely accommodating to anything and everything that we needed.
So how much of the story was rewritten after you settled on that town?
A handful of things, mostly small details. Yeah, small details, like we had written a rescue chopper. And when we got there, they told us, well, we use an airplane, not a chopper. So we made it an airplane, like small logistics like that. But for the most part, everything we wanted, we had. But again, we knew before we got there what we were going to have access to.
Okay, cool.
Another question that a lot of people had, we just were so fortunate to show the film at the SAG Foundation screening a couple weeks ago, which is such an honor here in Los Angeles. And a lot of the actors, and I know a lot of actors are listening, they had a question for both Mark and Michael, especially Mark as the director, about casting. So, Mark, do you want to touch on that for a minute?
Sure. I mean, for the most part, we wrote the principal characters with certain people in mind. So Louis Mandelor plays one of the other main characters, mm-hmm. David, in the script. His role was written for him. You know, Brooke's role was written for her. Michael's,
and
obviously. Ass face.
It's ironic because you're not an ass face. You're beautiful.
I'll give the background on ass face in a bit. Or Michael should, actually, because he's the one who thought it up. But a lot of the day players, we cast local actors out of Michigan. And even some of the principal actors kind of changed last minute. Kinga Phillips plays one of the leading female roles, but she was very last minute. She swapped somebody else out who, you know, a lot of times you just have scheduling conflicts. I had touched on Dominique's character. We had written it for a man. We had a well-known male actor lined up for it. I won't say who, but he was a member of the Breakfast Club. I'll leave it at that. But there was just... there was a potential scheduling conflict, and we were already out on set shooting, and I didn't want to take the chance that I would be left in a really bad position, because agents don't lose sleep over doing that to indie producers like me. So kind of on a whim, we decided to just, like, play it safe. Dominique happened to be out there. She wasn't in the film, but she's a close friend of the family, so to speak, so she was out there because she wasn't working. She was just hanging out with us. So anyway, that's how Dominique came into the film. But yeah, it's true. I mean, I try to avoid casting traditionally because it sucks. You know, for us sitting on the other side of the table is as uncomfortable and just ridiculous as it is for the people coming in to read for us. So I try to avoid traditional casting at all costs, but sometimes you can't avoid it. And we call people in and see some good people and see some bad people. And hopefully somebody comes in and just makes your head spin in a good way. And it kind of takes care of itself.
So in terms of production time, how long did it take from when you started filming to when you started showing the film at festivals and screenings?
Longer than we would have liked. but, you know, let's see, we shot in, I mean, to put it into perspective, we shot in fall of, like, I think October 2012. And so yep. now it's,
wow,
it just became spring of 2014 and the movie's being released. So that's how long it takes, literally. It's just sometimes it can go real quick and inside of a year. Other times it takes longer. And our post-production process was very drawn out. And it varies. This one took a couple of years, but it was for the best.
Well, and my next question is, what are you guys up to for your next project? Or can you talk about it yet?
Sure. Brooke, this is one of your favorite questions. You want to go?
Next project? Oh, no. She's asking you and Michael what your next project is.
Hey, you said you were involved.
I think she was asking all of us.
Yeah.
What is our next project? Am I in it? Please put me in it.
My next project, what I think is going to be my next project, you know, you never really know because you set out to do something and then life happens. But the project I'm currently trying to put together, I can't say specifically what it is, but it's an action movie. It's going to star a very, very, very well-known action star that I think everybody will be excited about. And, I wish I didn't have to be so ambiguous, but I hate to publicly announce details before everything's locked into stone, you know?
Yep.
But that's what I'm focusing on. Yeah, I mean, I tend to work with a lot of the same people over and over and over, sometimes in a large capacity, sometimes small. But I've made a lot of small movies, and some of them do great, some of them don't do great, and I'm trying to kind of step it up and work with some bigger stars, bigger budgets, things like that.
Okay, Michael, what about you?
As far as acting gigs, I have something coming out this summer called Six Ways to Sundown. It was directed by Nadine Suma, who was actually our DP on The Morning. Dominique is also in that. And who else is in that, Mark? Vinnie Jones, Vivica Fox, Tom Sizemore, somebody else. Sorry about somebody else. And I'm just an actor on that. I'm not a writer. I'm not a producer. As far as writing, producing, I have something partially written that I want to shoot in Michigan again. Same town, same time of year, just a different type of story.
Cool. And Brooke, how many movies are you shooting? How many different movies are you shooting this week?
Oh, dear. My goodness. It's from your mouth to God's ears. But we will let the sci-fi fans know that, you know, we talked about Starship Rising, the spaceship movie that came out at the end of last year, and Starship Apocalypse is releasing in April, and The Morning is releasing, and Lazarus, Day of the Living Dead horror just came out for all the horror fans. That's on Amazon right now, and we should shout out too to MTI for distributing The Morning, of course. And I've got a lot in the works. I'm working currently on Greg Lamberson's Killer Rack, which is a comedy with a tinge of horror about killer boobs, which the young sci-fi boys are going to love, and the horror fans. So we'll come on. I'll do a report on that. And shout out to Polygon, a comedy that I'm attached to, and Catalyst. I don't know. You know me. I'm always got things cooking, but I would love to go, honestly, do a film with Mark and Michael again. They're just all about integrity. It's really one of the best situations and sets I've been on in a really long time. Just artistic integrity, great actors, great script, great direction, great DP, everything. And that's, I think, what any actor longs for, hopes for, you know. And for all the actor listeners, it's like, we'll take, you know, a pay cut, you know, as an actor to have an incredible role, you know, and we'll travel to have an incredible role. And that's kind of how our group, you know, makes it work, makes it happen.
Well, I would like to thank all of you for contributing to the indie films and the small little films that make people think or argue or get confused or all three.
Can I give a quick plug with the details of the film?
Yes.
Wonderful. So the film is called The Morning, MOURNING. Stars Michael Walton, Louis Mandelor, Dominique Swain, Sally MacDonald, King Phillips, Larry Hankin, Peter Dobson, Brooke Lewis. And it's released throughout North America next Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. You'll be able to get it on Amazon and VOD, and it'll be on Redbox, and eventually a few months down the line, it'll be in Netflix. Anywhere you get your DVDs, you'll be able to find it. And Michael, what's the website for the film so they can watch the trailer?
TheMorningMovie.com.
TheMorningMovie.com. Again, that's M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G.
Yep.
So next Tuesday, March 17th, that's our street date. So please check it out and find us on Facebook and tell us what you think.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time today, everybody.
Thank you, Summer.
All right.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Brooke.
Oh, you're welcome, guys. Summer, thank you as always.
You just earned your part in the next movie.
Oh, you better. And to the Slice of Sci-Fi listeners, wait, Summer, I got to do it. Slice of Sci-Fi. This is your Slice Queen, Brooke Lewis, and we will shout back at you.
Excellent. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
He rolls 20 every time. He laid out plans for man to reach Mars and return safely on a cocktail napkin. The next day, it was approved. He always knows where his towel is. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friend.
So that'll do it for this episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. If you have any questions or comments or observations, if you've seen the movie The Morning, feel free to call those in. That number is 602-635-6976. That's 602-635-6976. Or send an email with any comment you've recorded to summer@sliceofscifi.com. And as always, you can leave comments on the website. That's www.sliceofscifi.com. You can check us out on Twitter. That's @sliceofscifi. We have a Facebook page. Just search Slice of Sci-Fi on Facebook. We also have a Google Plus page. So search us out there. And check out the It's Comic Book Day website if you're interested in a little bit more in-depth comic reviews. Michael J. is doing a fantastic job over there. Also, we are still working out the technical logistics for pulling in live callers via Skype while also broadcasting, but I think I got a handle on how to fix that properly. And once we get that going, there will be a Patreon page for people to subscribe, be a patron for Slice of Sci-Fi, and you'll get some special goodies that go along with that. As always, your donations are put to good use here, keeping the show going, keeping the websites up, keeping the media flowing. So thank you, everyone. And yes, people who have been long-term donators and supporters, you're also going to get some goodies. I'm working on a goodie basket for everyone who's at the various different levels of donations. Hopefully we can continue to keep this growing, expanding. If you have any sci-fi friends who haven't listened to Slice of Sci-Fi, tell them, let them know. If you have suggestions for any movies or web series projects or TV shows that we haven't talked about, call in, email in, let us know, get a discussion going, because that's what we're here for, to talk about this stuff with a wide variety of geeks, and that includes you. Yeah, you, I'm talking to you. I know you're out there somewhere, Retro, Rapid Eye, Gary from Jacksonville, Mark in Memphis, all of you guys. Anna, are you out there still? Stephanie in Hawaii. Are you still in Hawaii? Are you out there still? Everybody, if you're still listening, let us know. And you know what? If you're not listening anymore, let us know. How's that? So that'll do it for this episode. Once again, thank you to Cy Fried for the awesome music. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.